Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Keith Fravender, and this show is called Old and New. And the song you heard is from an album from a band I was in. The album itself is called Old and New. Actually, that's not right. That's called Voices from Home. Anyway, that's not the issue here. The issue here is I haven't done a show in a really long time. And this show is called Old and New, and my name is Keith Brabender, and I'm a little out of practice. And I haven't, as I say, it's been probably almost a year since I've tried this, but there have just been many personal interruptions that I've had in any attempt to do this show on a regular basis. But I decided today that I had some time, and I wanted to talk about the Republican Party because that's been the topic of conversation pretty much in the United States ever since Donald Trump started to run for president on this 2016 ticket, and we have the first caucuses and primaries coming up relatively soon. I just want to remind you, I have two books on Amazon, one called A Deserted Place, which is a novel, and one is called The Summit of Things, which is a book of poetry. And you can get them on Amazon under my name, Keith Brabender, or the name of the books, A Deserted Place or The Summit of Things. Yeah, I've had a very long hiatus, but there's an awful lot going on in the world. But yet, in a very odd way, and this is a strange place to start, there's almost nothing going on in the world because there's nothing new going on. If you look around you, what you are seeing is the culmination of 7.5 years or 7 years or how many days you want to put it of the Obama presidency and the public policies that have been carried on by the Republican Party and the Democratic Party since George Bush left office in 2008. And there's a lot of culminating factors in this, and in a sense, there isn't anything new. It's very much, I would call this almost like watching a pregnancy. To use the analogy that I'm using, the government of the United States, the various factors of Britain, France, and other countries in collusion with the United States impregnated the Middle East. And now we have the baby that's being born, and the baby that's being born is a very horrifying thing. It's like out of Rosemary's Baby or something. It's almost like a product of the devil. It is just not what anybody wanted to create, and it's a creation that is gotten completely out of hand. I feel like I'm in some sort of, like I said, you're in one of these weird 1950s horrors movies where everybody's waiting for this birth to occur, and when the child appears, they're all in terror of what's going to happen. Because Hillary Clinton, even as a Democrat, made a comment the other day that has to show she is either the greatest liar in the history of the world or she's completely out of her mind, because she made a comment that she thinks the Syria policy, basically, I'm paraphrasing, but she more or less said that she thought the Syria policy was working just fine. 4 million refugees, an invasion of Europe, mass executions, torture, murders, bombings, annihilation of women. It's all fine. I mean, it's just exactly what we wanted. And so I think what I would like to do today, though, to limit myself, is my topic is called What's Up with the Republican Party? And I'm going to go and do what I always do in these cases and not limit myself to the last 2 weeks. I think we have to really look at this in a long-term picture. And, I want to mention one thing. I'm not prepared today to take phone calls, so I'm just going to do my half hour. I've taken them before, but been so long since I've been on, I'm just going to take the half hour. But what I would like to do is go back to what I think is the telltale place to look at the Democratic and Republican Party, and that, of course, is back in the 1960s in the transitional period between Lyndon Johnson, Richard Nixon, Jimmy Carter to Ronald Reagan. And, of course, Gerald Ford's stuck in the middle there somewhere as an appointed president. Richard Nixon's legacy to the Republican Party is very complex, and I don't want to go through his whole legacy of Watergate and all that and Vietnam, But what I want to bring up is that Nixon really gave the Republican Party its bad odor to the Democratic Party because of corruption. And the label of corruption with the Republican Party is one that Nixon, I think, implanted permanently, and I don't think has ever left. And in many ways, the problem with this accusation and the way in which the Republican Party is depicted has, whether the Republican Party likes to admit to it or not, a certain validity to it. But it's a particular kind of corruption. And I think this is what I want to start to talk about with the Republican Party in its present form. The Richard Nixon corruption, believe it or not, is a corruption that is always described by those in the Republican Party as a corruption that came out of really good motives. It's not a corruption that came out of personal gain. Nixon was not accused of running around like a dictator in South America, pilfering money and stashing millions in a Swiss bank account, so that when he got done with his presidency, he'd go live in a villa somewhere in France, like, you know, like a baby Doc Duvalier did out of Haiti. This is not the corruption of the Republican Party. The corruption of the Republican Party is actually way more complicated than that. What the Republican Party is always accused of is that they have these underlying ideological motives that they believe are an imperative that have to be carried out, that they're at war with the great enemies of America. And in this fight against America, they commit criminal acts, things that are illegal, wiretappings, you know, and now in the NSA spying, CIA spying, collection of data, arrests of people with, you know, because, you know, the first great person to suspend habeas corpus was Abraham Lincoln in the Republican history. They want to do these things, but they want to do them because they feel that they're doing something really great for the world. That's how they present themselves. They're saving the world from all these enemies that are against us, and they're trying to preserve the society we have, which they always classify as the greatest society that's ever existed. And that's what they're, and then Nixon really put this in the forefront. You know, he was the great anti-communist who wanted to make sure that America wasn't overrun by people who were against its interests, who were in collusion with foreign countries, and who were literally on the side of those who were killing our own soldiers. That's what he wanted to do, at least on the face. That is an entirely separate corruption than the kind of corruption that Bill Clinton and his wife Hillary are accused of. The Clintons are accused of the classical Democratic corruption, which is the corruption of those who do everything for themselves. Hillary Clinton doesn't care about this country in the sense that, you know, she's a patriot or anything, but it's sure been really good to her and her husband. And he claims he came in as the poorest president in history. Well, now he's worth over $100 million. She gets millions of dollars a year for speaking engagements. They you know, what their daughter's wedding was like $3 million and $2 million just for the security. Her daughter married into the, like, Rothschilds or something. This is not a family anymore that is some little squalid trailer park Arkansas clan. And this is the thing I want to get at. I still think this is what's haunting this election in 2016. Is that you have two forms of corruption that are at war with each other. Hillary Clinton claims that she's doing all the good things for women, for the minorities, and this goes back to the Great Society of Lyndon Johnson, who I mentioned, who started all of this in the 1960s with his introduction of Medicare and the various different welfare state, and he's still accused of being the one, you know, that people don't like him, of destroying. But he had that same personal corruption. If you read about his life, he got himself various licenses for radio stations, he rigged elections, took a lot of bribery money. You know, there's the famous stories of him in the White House carrying around briefcases full of money. I mean, these are all the things that you hear about. And it's still the present case, I would argue. The corruption of the Republican Party is when you listen to the debates, what do they want to do? What does Marco Rubio want to do? He wants to bomb everybody. But he claims he's committing all these massive acts of violence to save America. He has to go to war with Iran, and he has to do all these things because he's underneath it all. He's a really, really good American, and he wants to save us all. And so we have this idea that, he's corrupt in some sense, that these people are always somehow beholden to the industrial defense complex, and there's $1 trillion spent on the Pentagon, and there's all this money that gets lost, and they're beholden to the banking cartel and all of that, but they're always saying it's not for their own personal gain. And Trump now, Mr. Trump, who's running for president, is the ultimate example of this. He doesn't need the money. He supposedly is worth somewhere in the $2 to $4 billion range, and he doesn't need the money. What does he need it for? He could buy all the yachts he wants. So if he's corrupt and he's doing things that are wrong, and he's committing acts that are criminal, it's because he, like all the rest of his Republican friends, are doing things because they want to do it for, quote unquote, to make America great. Now, in this history that I want to talk about, I think it's very important to bring up another idea here. And that is, since Richard Nixon was forced to resign and Mr. Ford took over in 1975, and Nixon was impeached, couldn't be impeached. And in my opinion, there's no way he would not have been impeached if he hadn't left. You have within the Republican Party ranks attempts since 1975 to take over the party, to usurp the power of the party. And the two great attempts in my lifetime that I'm aware of were by the Jerry Falwell Coalition of the Christian Right, and most recently from Ron Paul, and both failed. The Christian Right actually had more success than Ron Paul did as a libertarian, but ultimately they both failed. And I think this is the other really important thing to talk about. Besides the corruption, it ties into the corruption. The question is, if these two movements failed, if the Christian Right never ultimately completely took over the party, and the libertarian wing by Ron Paul didn't take over the party, who ended up winning? And it's a very complex question, because it's very obvious to simply say, well, Wall Street won. But I think that's a little bit too simplistic. I think the people who won in the Republican Party weren't simply Wall Street. I think what won in the Republican Party was the empire. I think if you look at the Christian Right and you look at Ron Paul, there were aspects within each of those movements that simply didn't fit into the empire. The Jerry Falwell Christian movement had domestic elements in it of abortion, euthanasia, homosexuality, these kinds of social topics that the empire didn't want to deal with. If you're running a worldwide empire, as the Americans do, and you have 140-some bases in 140 countries around the world, $1 trillion budget, CIA, NSA, a massive expenditures from the Federal Reserve, if you're running this worldwide empire, making deals with the Saudi Arabians, the most corrupt government in the world, and that they're your great allies in this whole empire building. You're supposedly now fighting the old Soviet Union through Putin, who is now Russia, but they always describe him as this KGB thug. He's now accused of committing murders overseas. You have this whole vast empire going. Do you really care about an abortion in Nigeria? Do you care a hoot and a holler if a woman wants to go to an abortion clinic in Des Moines, Iowa? They don't care. There are Republicans in this world that if you mention abortion and homosexuality to them, will crawl under the table. They'll just go hide. They don't care. This is not what running an empire is about. It isn't. Because when you run an empire, in as cynical as I'm going to sound, a dead body here and a dead body here, it doesn't matter. You know, 10,000 people die over here, and you blow up an embassy over here, and you bomb a country over here, and you throw over a dictator over here. A couple dead people here and there are just not anything to sweat. What are you worried about? It's just all part of the game. I mean, when the Roman emperors sat in their chambers with their generals, and some general ran in and said, "Oh my gosh, we had a war in Gaul today and 200 people died." Do you think the emperor gave a hoot and a holler? Do you think it was anything Nero worried about? Now, I'm being as cynical sounding as possible, but this is the way that it works. And Obama, his famous statement, "I'm really good at killing people, who would have thought?" It's all in the way in which it goes. Now, it's become much more complicated to run the empire because people are now not wanting any Americans to die, so we kind of have to blow people up by bombing them and then hiring mercenaries on our behalf and stuff, but, and I don't want to get into that. But this is what I'm saying about the empire. Falwell and his clan did not fit into the empire. They got George Bush elected in 2000. They backed the Iraq war, and the whole movement died. It was over. Because if you're going to be a Christian right and you're going to advocate the Iraq war, which was a total empire building fiasco, it was just the end of the game. Then Falwell died. Billy Graham and them got really old. They didn't get replaced by the same kind of people they were. The movement splintered. It went away. And what happened is the secular empire state certainly, and if you wanted a perfect example of this, it's Mitch McConnell, the guy from Kentucky, who's the old statesman now of the Senate. You know, he's made so many cynical deals with the Democratic Party over the last 6 months that he's been in office. And if, you know, Mitch McConnell is never going to try, in my opinion, in any way, shape, or form, to jeopardize the power of the Republican Party through gay rights or abortion or anything like it. It's not what they're worried about. They don't care what two men are doing in a motel room, Motel 6 in Miami Beach on a Saturday night. They don't care. You know, they got a world to run. They got continents to conquer. They've got corporations to instill all over the world. What these two men are doing in a Motel 6 in Miami Beach just isn't of any interest to them. And you know what? Maybe it shouldn't be. Maybe it shouldn't. But I don't really know if they should be blowing up the world at the same time. And then you've got the other side of the coin, which was the libertarian wing of the coin, which was Ron Paul. And he attempted to take over the party in 2008, and he completely failed. His son's running now as Rand Paul, and he's just not getting anywhere. Many of the people who were behind him, I think, have just lost their faith and lost their interest. But this is the ultimate question about that the Republican Party has to ask, and that is, why are these people still in the Republican Party? Why is a Christian right, someone from the Christian right, still in the Republican Party? Why? If the candidates who are running for president are any indication as to who's behind them. Donald Trump is a businessman. Donald Trump wants to sell things. If two gay men go to his casino and they want to gamble, do you think he cares that they're gay? No. This is not of any interest to him. And what I'm saying is, this is why the Christian right left, why the reason the libertarian wing of the party left was they were unable to back the Middle East policy and the worldwide empire. Just the same way that the Christian right failed the empire, the libertarian wing of the Republican Party failed the empire. Ron Paul and Rand Paul have no interest in building a worldwide empire. It's not in their DNA. You know, they don't want to get up in the morning and tell people in the Congo what to do, or tell people in Malaysia what to do, or tell some guy living in Nepal whether he's supposed to be a Buddhist or not. It's not anything in their DNA. They're not interested in bombing somebody to make them do what they want. It's not. And the thing is, if you're going to be like that, then you're not going to succeed in this party, in my opinion. You're just not going to succeed. It's not going to. You're not going to be the one in the front. And so, in my opinion, the state of the Republican Party, when I say what's up, and I have 10 minutes left here, boy, I sure didn't cover nearly as much, I never do, as I wanted to, is I think the key person to understand in this whole thing is Ronald Reagan. Because they're always going back to what was supposedly the great moment of the Republican Party, and that was Ronald Reagan. When he was against the great, you know, he was the great anti-communist, and the Berlin Wall fell, and they ignore the fact that he had Alzheimer's and had no idea what he was doing for the last 2 years of his presidency and didn't know his name, but at the same time, he's still the great figure. But here's the paradoxical problem of Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan ultimately did something that you can really say was one of the greatest mistakes ever made in American history and in contemporary history. And that is ultimately what Ronald Reagan did, is Ronald Reagan didn't dismantle the empire, and he didn't dismantle the domestic welfare state. Whether we want to admit to it or not, Ronald Reagan created the idea that you could run them both, that you could run the empire and run the domestic welfare state, and they could run together, and they could stay together, and you could run up the debt till you were drowning in it, but it was all okay. And the Republican Party doesn't want to admit to that. They're always talking about how Reagan wanted smaller government and all this stuff. It never came out that way. Yeah, you know, you can point here and there and say he did this and he lowered taxes and all this kind of thing. But what he did, in retrospect, that what happened to the world is, and this is what the Republican Party refuses to face. When the Berlin Wall fell in the 89-90 period and you had the collapse of the Soviet Union and the freeing of Eastern Europe, you had a declaration made by the capitalist states of the world that they wanted to run the world now. The communists had lost and the capitalists were going to run the world. We are now in 2016 and it's been 26 years since the wall fell. Entire generation has not lived under the communist hammer and sickle. And look at where we are. We have the worst wealth disparities ever imagined. This big statistic came out this week where the richest 62 people in the world supposedly have as much wealth as the bottom 3 billion of people of the world combined. We have terrible situations all over the world now, where yes, there is great improvement in certain countries from what they used to have, but the West is in serious trouble. France has declared an economic calamity. The socialist countries are having serious problems, but the capitalists are simply garnering more and more and more money at the top, and the people who live at the bottom are simply going nowhere. And what you have within the context of this 26 years is this question: is this the world that the Republican Party wanted? And the Republican Party has to answer that question. And in my opinion, this question is not being faced by anybody who's up front in the Republican Party. Trump keeps talking about we can be great again and that kind of thing. But the truth of the matter is, he keeps talking, as these people all do, about reinvigorating the Western capitalist society. But first of all, can it be done? And the second question is, do the people who run the country really want to do that? What makes Obama such an extraordinary figure in this whole historical context is that he took a country in which he claimed he wants to make it more equal than it's ever been. He's always talking about making a better country and making a more perfect union and bringing all the minorities and that into the government, which he's done in many ways. But at the same time, he will leave as president, in which he's made a far more unequal society economically than when he came in. and he'll be making them far more on a really disastrous world than when he came in. We have more refugees now, supposedly worldwide, than any time during during like World War II. And what I'm trying to bring up here is what's up with the Republican Party. The Republican Party, in my opinion now, cannot define itself. And where it's being defined is locally. And that is the answer to the question as to why the Christian right and some of the libertarians have stayed in the party. They're losing the party nationally, but some of them are winning it locally. They're going at great strides in an attempt to pass legislation within their own states, to get their own governors elected, to make an attempt to get people voted on their school boards, to make an attempt to get people voted at the local level, the local sheriff, whoever it is that they can vote for. But I think a lot of them have become deeply disillusioned with the way in which the national elections are being done. And the truth of the matter is, my problem with this election, even with Donald Trump running, is the fact that in some ways the national election hasn't been helped. Now, why do I say that about Donald Trump? Donald Trump, in my opinion, is in the lead for the Republican Party for one reason and one reason only. And that is the people who are in the Republican Party who care about politics refuse to vote in a guy who's a member of the establishment. Rubio and all these people have served in the government. They're part of the problem. None of them are going to vote in Lindsey Graham. Lindsey Graham is seen as one of the biggest reasons we're in the mess we're in. Huge debt, idiotic wars overseas, overthrows of governments that failed. It's just a mess. It's a catastrophe. And anybody, by anybody's stretch of imagination, in Syria, for example. And so he's part of the problem. And Trump is simply the guy who isn't seen as somebody who created the problem. And so there are people who are going to go to him and say, okay, let's give this guy a try, because at least he was never in the middle of all the messes we've made. And he can survive on that for a while. However, there is another aspect of the American psychology that I think is very detrimental, but will not allow Donald Trump to necessarily win. I haven't decided yet at this point if he's going to win or not. It's still, I think, a very murky waters until the primary starts and we see what the Republican Party wants to do. And that is, there is this other aspect of America, and that is people are afraid of losing what they have. And when you have a society in which over half of the people in the United States, supposedly of voting age, receive some kind of government benefit, whether it's medical, the Obamacare has greatly increased Medicaid, whether it's medical care, whether it's a welfare check, whether it's a food stamp card, whatever that thing is they get, whether it's Social Security, whatever it is, when the election time comes, they will. Many, many, many Americans are going to be in terror of losing what they got. And this isn't just about the welfare people in any way, shape, or form. If you have a middle-class family now that is really struggling, and their grandmother is in a nursing home and she's on Medicare or Medicaid, they can't pay to have her in there. And if they think a candidate is going to not pay for their mother's nursing home stay, they will not vote for that person. And I think this is going to be the great war for the next 6 months. What is the Republican Party going to do about preserving the empire, to go back to Reagan, and maintaining the welfare state? And can it do both at the same time? And will it allow itself to be seen as somebody who can? But as far as the Republican Party itself, it's the empire that's winning. And what Ron Paul and the Christians and all these people have to do is they have to decide if they want to keep the empire and stay in the empire or get out of the empire. And quite frankly, I don't know if anybody has shown the real true gut it takes to get out of the empire. I'm out of time again. Thank you very much. And it's been a really long time since I've done this, and I'm going to have to see how it works. Have a great day. God bless. Bye.